Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the biotech sector. And to do that, we're very kindly joined by Daniel Koller, who is the head portfolio manager at BB Biotech. Daniel, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Yes, wonderful. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to be discussing the biotech sector in some detail. We're going to be looking at BB Biotech's portfolio and where they see value within that market. But before we get into it, Daniel, please would you be able to give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself as well as BB Biotech, please?
Yes, sure, of course. Thanks, first of all, for having me. So I said, my name is Daniel Koller. I lead the portfolio management team, or the investment management team, as we define it, of BB Biotech. BB Biotech is a Swiss investment company that started back in 1993. So last November, we actually made it to 30 year. And I'm part of a broader team. So we have actually six independent board of directors, where we just recently had a change last week, actually, at the AGM. So five people reconfirmed, one person didn't stand for re-election, one new person. And I said, I'm part of a team. We are actually 13 people strong that we are saying within Bellevue Asset Management, which I'm employed at, that are dedicated to BB Biotech. And the team consists of three groups. Seven of us are investment managers, three which we define as data scientists, and three in the realm of investor relation. And I would say that's a very close-knitted team. I have a background in biochemistry, did a PhD in biotechnology back in the days, quite some time ago, actually, in a startup company, I have to say. And since I said now, soon 20 years, actually, at Bellevue Asset Management and responsible for BB Biotech, I said, right now around 2.5 billion Swiss francs equity valuation of BB Biotech that we manage and invest, as said, in the global biotech sector as such.
We're going to start with looking at the influences in the biotech sector at the moment. We're going to be touching on some of the trends, and then we're going to go through and look more specifically at the BB Biotech portfolio later on in the podcast. But we'll start with setting the scene, if we may, Daniel, and look at how the sector has evolved since the pandemic. It's a particularly exciting time for the sector. There's a huge amount of innovation. What do you think are the biggest influences at the moment? Of course, you know, during the pandemic, there was a big focus on therapies there. And there's actually some of the companies in the portfolio that were very heavily involved in that. But, you know, after we move past the pandemic, what are the big influences that you see that are driving the sector at the moment?
Yeah, I think I said it was very interesting, actually, to watch how we have shifted kind of like almost in waves, at least in trends is always a bit of a big word, obviously in the shorter term, but still kind of like in waves, where I said Wall Street focus has been, as well as where I would say a bit more the industry focus or even M&A has played out. So Wall Street focus coming from the pandemic, and then obviously the sell-off post-pandemic has tried to find a new home in terms of where do we see the next innovation cycles or curves that happen. And we had, I would say, in the biotech space, a rather short stint towards Alzheimer that then unfortunately didn't pan out in a sense as expected, in that I said the product launched underwhelmed quite a bit. The clinical data so far still not exactly obviously what we hope for in terms of a slowdown, even halt of disease. And then a focus rather quickly shifted towards obviously the obesity topic that we have seen as well, at least in the prescription medication or pharma market, has propelled you know, even large caps like Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk now to become actually the largest capitalized healthcare companies that we have in on a global level. And biotech, as I said, I would say we have moved from certain technology areas. I said in the days of the pandemic was obviously the vaccines, mostly around the mRNA thematic or the mRNA technology. We still see that. We have had in the meantime as well, for example, the first gene editing product approved. That was developed by two of our portfolio companies with CRISPR and Vertex. So much smaller area or obviously commercial opportunity, but I think nevertheless a major milestone all the way to commercial. So we have seen a shift, you know, in terms of different dynamics. M&A, I mentioned already. We have seen post the pandemic quite a slow and underwhelming, I would say, activity almost in terms of what all has happened there and how much money or capital was actually gained and earned out. That has clearly accelerated in the second half of 2023 and even more so into the latter part of 2023, where I said in November and December, we suddenly saw quite a flurry of, I would say, even sizable takeover activity. And year to date, it's again slow. I would say for me, at least surprisingly slow, because I think, as I said, you know, the large pharma and large biotech continue to have patent cliffs and clear requirement for external innovation, meaning to either license or in our case as well, for the industry to acquire quite a bit within small mid-cap biotech. So we had so far seen a slow start, but we actually expect a similar trend than what we have seen in 2023, that there is no way around for the large caps then to obviously seek small mid-cap expertise, know-how, and innovation by either, I said, licensing or transaction.
My next point here, Daniel, and this speaks to, I think, you know, your thinking and where you see opportunities in the market as well, from the standpoint of BB Biotech. But are there any, you mentioned there obesity, but are there any conditions or diseases that you see out there at the moment where there is big step forwards being taken and ones that you see BB Biotech wanting to be involved in going forwards?
Yes. So there we could speak for an hour, but obviously we don't want to do so. So I would start off as well, even mention, let's say, a success of the past, like a Vertex that has literally transformed, you know, how, for example, cystic fibrosis is not just treated, but actually have a huge impact on daily life, quality of life, and I would say even normalizing life expectancy for a CF patient that has access to these medications. And we see multiple of these opportunities. So on one dimension or on one level, we have technology advancements that we think will disrupt certain areas that in the past have not been possible, as I said, with gene therapy, gene editing, and cell-based therapies in disease areas. Actually, we think biotech will start to move a bit more from this orphan area and smaller patient population, you can say niche markets, into the more prominent and broader disease areas and indications. So I think we think in neurology still, let's forget about Alzheimer for a bit, but in neurology and psychiatry, see big leaps that are right now ongoing. We think in the autoimmune area, we see substantial progress and new technology and innovation. And I would still flag actually a theme or a disease area that BB Biotech has had a long-term exposure and investment cycle that has been rather rough the last 2 years, but that's still oncology. So with the focus, said obesity, mostly on, you know, some of these, said, two large pharmaceutical companies and a couple of fast followers, at least companies that try to follow, we see as well a lot of value and still investment area in other space. And then prominently mentioned, for example, two cases which we just have done end of last year. I said one was in the field of oncology, where we think in the solid tumor setting, we have a new technology with, as said, a new platform that, for example, an Immunocore is developing. We think that's, for example, an exciting area that as I said, smaller and mid-cap biotech have a very interesting lead. And then the second new investment we have done, for example, last year was Biohaven, I said that's a blend between what's going on in psychiatry field all the way to epilepsy, but on the other hand as well, a very interesting next generation platform that's quite early, to be fair, but that we think could have substantial implication, for example, in autoimmune disorders. So kind of like similar topics, but we think a bit different in terms of weighting. So trying to move away to some degree a bit more from the orphan and rare and high price settings and move into a bit more the more prominent and the higher number in terms of patient population and lower price point indication that are out there that are in new need for actually innovation.
Just moving on to my next point, it was outlining some of your recent investments, which you've already done, Daniel. Thank you. But following on from that, it would be good to get some insight into the strategy in terms of at which point does BB Biotech like to be involved? You obviously outlined there some crucial work that these companies are doing, but in terms of the life cycle of these companies, at which point would BB Biotech look to be involved and make initial investments or follow-on investments into a company?
Yeah. Thanks for that question. I think it's a very important one, which we think as well quite a bit about. Given I said that we have now 3 decades of experience as such. So we have our so-called S-curve strategy that we follow now for pretty much 3 decades. And the core concept has stayed the same or similar. But I said we applied quite differently and now spend enormous efforts to try to understand actually when companies move from, let's say, the so-called preclinical stage, mostly towards starting to test their new molecules and their pipeline assets, as we define them in our realm, in actually patients and test for efficacy on one hand, and on the other hand, obviously for safety, which is still, the ideal balance that you try to find as such. So these are in general, as I said, companies that are earlier stage, that are in general smaller cap, I would say to smaller mid cap companies, where I said we seek to do the investments. We follow then a long-term strategy as such that we can help and support these companies by giving them as well capital. That it has been always, I would say, at the center of what BB Biotech does. So not just buy stakes or equity position in the market from other shareholders, but actually support our portfolio companies with so-called working capital so that they can invest in their pipeline assets. And then to the latter part of this, when companies have then launch products, revenue growth, and they become more mature company and their growth cycle would start to come down or would slow down and below our threshold level, so to speak, we would then start to take profits and obviously reinvest at the lower part of this growth cycle. So that's the beauty of an investment company, that we have there a fixed amount of capital available that we can asset deploy in a highly exciting sector as such that takes though some time, because said the cycle between early investment all the way to product approval, launch, and even profitability is somewhere between 5 and 10 years. So it needs quite some stamina, let's say, patience as well on the underlying individual investment case. And that I said we try to as well reflect by having a distributed portfolio over the different cycle and life cycles of our portfolio holdings.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Daniel. I want to now bring in the question of valuation, because looking at the portfolio, it is a broad portfolio, but and it's really a question between, first of all, European biotech and US biotech, and where you see relative value between the two. And the second point that I would have is, how much does valuation play a part in the investment process when you're looking at companies? For example, if you see an exciting development in a company that you want to be involved in, if you're looking at the valuations and maybe it's a little bit too rich for you, would that prevent you from getting into it? Or are you really looking at the bigger picture and the longer term of where these could go? And on the flip side of that, if you see a company that's of a lower valuation relative to some of its peer, but you're not that excited about the developments. You obviously think it will do well, and you know there's a commercial prospect for their innovations. You know, would a lower valuation take you into a company if you weren't that much inclined, if it was a higher valuation, for example? It would be good to get your perspective on that.
Now, I think there we could be almost called out a bit picky, in a sense that we love to have obviously all ducks aligned, in a sense that, you know, valuation alone cannot be the reason for an investment. So it has to be the fundamental excitement, interest in a being a set of new technology or a new asset. At the same time, you don't want to overpay for these as well. So we sometimes stay on the sideline for valuation reasons, mostly if we think stocks are overvalued, or we stay on the sideline if you think the company can be, though, valuation wise attractive, but then, you know, we think ultimately the technology or the product will not be a winner over the next many years to come. So that makes it a bit tricky, in a sense, how to play this. But I said that's per se always the same, that we take a very fundamental and long-term view. So we dare to make long-term assumptions and models, and obviously discount them back for companies that have products and profits in the future, and try to stack this up against the risk we take, as well as the upside case. And that often means as well, valuation is ultimately then sometimes even the soul killer, or I said the investment reason, but it's not the only reason or the sole reason to do, for example, investment on the other end. I'm not sure if I make myself clear, but I said it still comes back to that we have a concentrated portfolio. I didn't mention that before, so maximum 35 position. Right now it's around 30, to be precise. It was 29 by the end of 2023, and I told you we have this different maturity stages of companies that we try to reflect in a portfolio. We have the different disease areas that we try to tackle, or as I said, address with our companies. And we have different technologies. And if in the add these, you have very few and select positions that we can fit. And so far, I would say we have most often always found what we want to. Sometimes it needs a bit of patience, because ultimately in the mid and long term, we think fundamental valuation plays a role. So just playing or trying to invest in momentum or valuation reversal, that's something we would shy away, because we don't have the expertise there as well. So it's a different investment strategy and philosophy that can play well for others, but EB Biotech takes there, as I said, a fundamental long-term view.
Thank you very much. So I think it would be appropriate to touch on AI, if we may, Daniel, and you know, of course, there's huge steps forward in the capabilities of AI. But from where you're sitting, you know, how's that being implemented in the biotech sector? Are there any companies within the portfolio that you see have an AI strategy that's being implemented that is producing tangible results? Are there huge efficiencies from AI that you see? You know, it would be good also if you could speak about how, you know, any examples of companies are implementing AI within their business in the biotech sector.
Yeah, I would start to say, you know, the terminology for artificial intelligence is obviously, you know, not the easiest one, because a lot of people understand quite different things about it. So the way, as I try to outline, we have a team, for example, that we don't define as AI, but actually as data scientists that help us to work with very large data sets and try to analyze these and make it interpretable, so that we as ultimate investment managers still can take individualized decisions, or, you know, human driven decisions. And what we hear quite a bit is said that computer assisted or AI-assisted approaches are making quite some inroad and importance in terms of, you know, for example, pipeline candidate selection, finding new pathways, ultimately probably finding as well better patient population to test these and then have a higher efficiency towards reaching market. That's still something that the industry has to prove. And I would say we have the whole spectrum. So companies who talk quite a lot about it, but I think are early and have to show us the proof. And we have probably other comps that talk less about it, but we think are actually much more advanced. And let me bring back the example, for example, of Moderna. I think that's one of the most advanced examples, actually, for example, taking this personalized cancer vaccine approach, where, say, the physician takes, for example, a small sample of a patient's tumor, ships that to Moderna. They analyze it, have algorithms to read ultimately what genetic code the vaccine shall look like, because said it's individualized for every patient. It's going to be a different vaccine ultimately. And 3 to 4 weeks later, you have actually, you know, the syringe back at the physician office with a product in there. I think that's absolutely astonishing and testament to, you know, that some of these approaches are already quite tangible and far advanced, and hopefully soon accessible for the healthcare system in a broader scale. On the other hand, I said, industry-wide, how much the efficiency in drug development in terms of shortening timelines, reducing cost, increasing efficiency, I think we are still in the early inning, and we are highly excited about what's going on. But ultimately, we still want to see the proof of concept that I said, you know, we have the measures and, if you can say so, the statistics that this really has played out. But I think to not invest in this or not work with these new technologies is something that nobody can allow to do. So let expect more to come out of the industry and what we do ourselves.
Fantastic, Daniel. Very interesting. So I want to move on now and talk about the Inflation Reduction Act and how that's affecting big pharma. You know, what part that is playing in your investment process, your investment decision making, and also put it into the context of the small and mid cap sector, and whether you see it as a headwind or a tailwind for that area of the market.
Yeah, I think IRA is a complicated one in terms of, I said, if you want to understand the terminology or actually the language of the policy, it takes quite an effort not just to understand obviously what's written there, but even more complicated to understand actually who is ultimately affected. So we know by now that 10 medications are right now in a negotiation process where the US government will negotiate for rebates, meaning that they kick in the next couple of years. I said 9 of these 10 drugs are in big pharma, one is in big biotech. I think it's specifically Amgen that's called out there. So we don't know yet what the outcome is and how much or how big and large these rebates going to look like. The message we hear back from pharma is they think it's obviously not ideal, but they think it's digestible and manageable. One of the important caveats we take out of it as biotech investor is, or detail differences that start to play out somewhat, is that this IRA law makes certain differences on who develops drugs. So is it a small company or a large company? And for example, all the way to technology. So is it a so-called small molecule or chemically manufactured small molecule, or for example, a complex technology, because one has 9 years of protection all the way that certain rebates start to kick in. The more complicated technologies have somehow the law or the right to be protected all the way to 13 years. And then there are a lot of exceptions. Are you, as I said, a small cap company? Are you a vaccine? Yes or no? Orphan disease? You have to work through all the weeds of it to understand it. So we have seen for a while that small molecule companies were deemed to be at a disadvantage. And actually, as I said, Wall Street reacted to that. Initially, it looked like pharma would acquire the better protected kind of like assets. I said the complicated biologics or complex molecules. But that has reverted quite a bit because I said certain disease areas are big. And last but not least, you have to dissect, is this a patient population in the US that's being paid for by the government, meaning the retirees or the poor population? Or are we talking about, for example, the private insured market? So there are a lot of caveats in detail. I think still that a lot of people, instead of doing all the homework, just said, this sounds like risk. So we leave the sector or sell out of the sector. And we have seen not the same, but I would say an interesting historical consideration that this was, as I said, in the early 2010 years, when I said the Obamacare Act played out, and I said the US had one of the big overhauls of its healthcare system. Following that, we had, for example, one of the best biotech ever investment cycles. I cannot promise you that now IRA playing out and visibility will end up to do the same, but that's something we watch. And I said, it's not so easy just to say, is it a tailwind or is actually a headwind for smaller mid cap? I think it will ultimately continue to enforce that some of the large companies are more under pressure to actually said fill their gaps. And that, I said, will ultimately happen by innovation, by new assets, being it licensing or M&A yet again. So I think that will support that. On the other hand, you can say shortening certain, you know, earning cycles for the industry could be a downside. So you have to balance out and understand the individual risks per company.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Daniel. So to finish off now, after what's been a fascinating conversation, I'm going to ask, what excites you the most about the year ahead?
Yeah, I think we are in an interesting time in the sense that, I said, the sector per se, if you exclude one or the other large cap, has consolidated now for many years, if we exclude now this pandemic excursion and correction. So a lot of fundamental progress, we think, is still by Wall Street undervalued. That's our take at BB Biotech. We see now the market opening up, that I said, secondaries and capital increases start to happen again. We see this as a signal of a certain re-increased risk appetite, if you want to say so. We think we're going to have an interesting moment when the central banks start to lower rates, because that has been, I think, quite an impediment from an investment and refinancing cycle over the last 2-3 years. And that will be interesting, I said, starting summer then, when mostly the highly watched US central bank will start potentially to act. I mentioned you already M&A. I'm still wait day by day, where are the big deals that pop up and who's going to be the acquirer and who's to be acquired. And most importantly, I said, we're going to have, I think, a great year in terms of a lot of milestones. And I call them high important milestones, meaning late clinical trials that will mean, you know, not just a lot of patients that can be addressed, hopefully with better drugs in the future, but ultimately as well shall drive share price returns and performance. So I think actually we had a good start, not a great start to the year, but it was a solid start to the year. I'm actually very optimistic as well for the next cycle, that I said, fundamentally, we're going to see a very interesting 2024 ahead of us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Daniel. Just a note to listeners, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there'll be a link in there through to the BB Biotech website, where you'll be able to find out more information about the portfolio, some of the companies that BB Biotech are holding, and obviously look at the general investor information. So, Daniel, thank you very much for being with us today.
Yes, thanks a lot for having me again. Have a nice day.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.